Welcome to Brands Talking Influencers Q&A. We're taking our fireside chat to the Grin Gets Real podcast. Now you can listen and learn beyond the webinar experience. During the latest Brands Talking Influencers fireside chat, how to scale your influencer program via testing, we shared influencer marketing insights from Natural Dog Company. Now, during the live portion, we discussed how they leverage their creator community for content to repurpose across multiple marketing channels, building brand awareness, and acquiring new customers. We also touched on workflow best practices, how to test with purpose, and then finding creators at any stage of an influencer program. While we had a live Q&A, there were just too many questions to go over. So we're bringing those unanswered questions to the Grin Gets Real podcast. Put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for those unanswered questions with Emma from Natural Dog Company. Emma, welcome back to the other side of Brands Talking Influencers. This is the Grin Gets Real podcast where we take all of those unanswered questions and get all the good tidbits from those answers. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. This one's an easy one. We're going to start with an easy one here. How many creators do you actively work with?
I would say around 100 actively. And I use actively in like on a weekly basis, like I'm interacting with them each week because we do have like a pocket of people who I either hear from like once a month or like biweekly, but there is like a small group, I would say maybe more 80 to 100 that like I'm in constant communication with and not always necessarily like email. I'm just sometimes like in their DMs just being like, so cute, like just kind of interacting. Love your dog because they're all really cute. Again, it's a hard job I have over here.
Okay. So what is your objective with your program? This is a really great question. And I think we answered it during the chat, but maybe we can just lay it out right now. You know, I always say this with creators and influencer marketing, you always get brand awareness, you get content, you're going to get revenue and you're going to get community. If you had those four to pick from priority order, what's like your first objective?
Yeah, I think for us, revenue is top. And that is really focused on that commission base. We do drive a significant amount of revenue from our creators who are commission based. And I think like as a brand, as we're growing, like that's always something in the back of our, like we always just really want to prioritize working with people who are going to help us grow. Again, like making sure it's both sides. And then from there, interestingly, it used to be brand awareness that would come second. But nowadays it's content because I think we're struggling with all the algorithm changes and just like people on social media. We thought we had like our content figured out of like what we needed, but with videos and stuff, we need more of it. And we're not necessarily getting the content that we are looking for, knowing that it's going to perform well with us. So some of our creators are very like more humor-based, let's say, or just like cutesy, which is great. But because we're a very educational brand and like our products are very like simply like your dog has an issue and like this is going to solve it type of deal, like our content needs to focus on that messaging because that's a very like important key of our brand message.
Yeah.
So right now, like I'm really focusing and I work with our social media manager a lot back and forth of like when we do run campaigns being even more specific, but also like where is that fine line of giving them the autonomy of like content? Because for campaigns, they're always getting a product from us too and focusing on the individual product and trying to generate stronger content that they can. And we always ask them, but a lot of them, especially the ones that's working with us for a while, are very like open to letting us use the content on our end. So it's important to us, again, to make sure that the content they produce is something that we are able to use. And it's been a little frustrating, I will admit, in the past like 2 months of everything switching. I feel like the algorithms seem to be changing every day and like how people are seeing your content. So you have to make sure that when they do see it, it's like spot on. So revenue, content, and then brand awareness. Brand awareness, I always in my head, and you could break it down multiple ways, like looking at what they post content-wise, like impressions, engagement. I focus more on the engagement because that tends to reach people deeper than just like how many, like their total reach of like how many people they're reaching when they post the content. So I like to see the engagement number go up when we run campaigns and stuff. So that's, I would say that's top three. I like my threes. So We'll go with that.
I like those threes as well, too. I'm right there with you when it comes to engagement as well, too. I think that's such a meaningful metric, and it is something that you want to see go up. And especially from a content repurposing standpoint as well, like it's a great number to see what resonates with an audience. If it's willing to like get a share alike, or the ultimate is like the comment.
Yes.
Like
yes.
That shows that like there's something about this content that's really resonating. So yes, like a content piece that has a higher amount of impressions has been seen, quote unquote, but you know, also a billboard on a freeway has been seen, not engaged with, right?
Exactly. That's a perfect example. Like you see it, but ideally it stays in the back of my head when I see a billboard, but like the fact that I didn't engage with it and like have that like memory with engaging with it, then it's not going to stick with me if I'm a new customer or potential customer. So
agree. Okay. So this one is, share a little bit about your workflow when working with creators. Are you setting up multiple campaigns? Is it just one campaign? Is it, I think in the, during the fireside chat, you had mentioned an evergreen campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not sure how many campaigns. We get a lot of questions of that. Is it a lot of them or is it just one and done?
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier, I like to call our evergreen program. So this is just a very basic requirement to work with Natural Dog Company. So if they tried our products with product gifting and they come into this evergreen program that they are very passionate about us as a brand and want to work with campaigns that I'm running in terms of like whether it's content generation or a big promo coming that they can benefit from. That's like the overarching, we'll look at it from a funnel, like the largest piece of it. And then I break it down. Usually month by month, I'll have at least one. It also needs to align with like our promotions and new product launches. That's also something that needs to be more prioritized, honestly, because with something new, we don't even have like UGC content to use. So like that's really a priority to focus on those creators to get that content. And it's also much more exciting because like you're one of the first to get to try a new product. But like we did a summer skin sale earlier, and like before we ran that promotion, I was working with creators of like picking out of like our summer collection. So our products that really help during the summer heat. So again, back to those paw balms, if you're walking on pavement, or like a lot of allergies for dogs come up in the summer. So like our skin and coat supplements or our oils really benefit. So based off of, again, like with that breed, like, is there certain creators we have that I know that their dogs struggle with an issue that could be much more authentic when they create that content, because their audience knows that like, oh, this dog does have issues and this is how they're solving it, as well as seeing like what kind of content we want. So I'll funnel them in. I just kind of pick who I think best resonates with a certain campaign. You pause them. If you're running something like I do in an evergreen program, you pause them in the evergreen and I funnel them into an activation, because activation is much more customizable for me to work closely with them. And then from there, it just works traditionally like any other campaign. I sent out an email like, hey, like I want you to be a part of this campaign. We're like really exciting promo coming up. So they'll go through, they'll submit the proposal if they want to join, pick their product out. And then from there, managing it like any other campaign. And then, you know, once it ends in your report, you unpause them and then kind of go from there. So it's like we use an interesting model, I think, but we have seen a lot of success with this like flat evergreen program. So it's being more creative month by month of like what's going on around the world, like what's the weather like outside, to really fit that seasonally and work with the creators that way.
Well, and it tells a better story, right? Like we're just talking about like telling the story across the board. It's nice to see it like throughout the season. Because even to use your example of like the hiking dog, which I love the idea that there's a dog that's like, let's go on a hike. But like, you know, you sent me stuff for my dog, Poncho, and I have two dogs. I just have one problem child dog, Poncho, who is like forever like tearing up his paws. Cause I don't know, he just runs hard or whatever it is. And it's one thing if it happens once and then you have the solution, but to be able to see like, all right, well, what else can we use this? Yes, it's injury, but maybe it is also a maintenance thing, and like across different types of weather, seasons, and all of that stuff. So I love that you have that kind of top of funnel approach to with your evergreen campaign of like, these are all of the creators and influencers, but what's ultimately that next goal, that next product that I'm trying to promote out?
Yeah, for sure. And I also think like creators, I like to give them as much autonomy to create as like what they want and fit with their audience. But I think especially nowadays, they're looking for more ideas from you than you like may think. So we've kind of tested that out too, to see like kind of giving them more created like guides of like, this is what we're looking for. Like ultimately, like you get to create the content, like you are the expert, but this is what we have it like in mind. And I think especially for those accounts who maybe on their side more focused on like monetizing and like growing their account, they need content ideas. So I think with the brand, like you have to make sure you have that relationship, but like don't always necessarily think that you can't speak up or like give guidance to what you're looking for, because depending on the person and how frequently they want to post, it's hard to come up and be creative all the time for ideas. And like, it's, I always find it benefit like beneficial to ask people like, what ideas do you have? Because at some point, like my brain's going to be fried and I like, I need creativity juices to kind of help me going. So that's just a based off relationship.
I love it. All right. So what is the biggest lesson you've learned when working with creators, and how has that helped you adapt your, either your process or your program?
I'll be a little more specific with this example, but coming back to the testing out different niches, figuring out like which influencer type, let's call it, like works best with our brand. There was a bigger account that reached out to us to do a collaboration. And this was definitely a bigger negotiation price than we have done before, but we're really like open, willing to try it because we haven't before. We thought that they were a good fit. So like, again, we did our research, at least we thought we did our best of like understanding, does this creator like work with our brand well? Like, what about the dog? How often are they posting about the dog? And like running reports and seeing like their credibility, everything checked off. But what we missed was your brand may have a certain product that is for a certain type of person. And you intuitively want to go after that type of person, like that customer. So like for us, like dogs are customers. So like, why don't we go after like a dog that has a big presence on social media platform, which is what happened in this case. But what we didn't necessarily figure out until after, when we weren't seeing the return we thought we were going to get, was his audience, despite having our audience that we were looking for in it, and he was like in the millions like following count. So many people were there, and like people like me who don't have a dog, have a cat, animal lover, but like I'm not necessarily going to be purchasing a dog product because I don't need it. I just follow this account because he's funny and he's cute, and like I just want to engage with it. So that was an interesting test. We went in thinking it was going to be a big revenue focused goal where the impressions and the engagement skyrocketed, but like almost like there was not much of a return from a revenue perspective. And we were a bit like, oh, this is interesting. But then realizing like his audience was even larger than our customer base, meaning that like so many different people who don't have dogs are following it. So that was, I would say, like a biggest lesson that I learned of focusing outside of what you would think is natural for the brand. Yeah. So again, coming back to like why we started creating these like personas and going after these certain other niches of the person who had a dog, because their audience most likely has a dog too and resonates best with them for whatever like educational purposes they're sharing on their account. So that fail forward, like we realized quickly like what had happened with that, especially because at that point when you start paying people, there's a bit more of a risk and you want to see a bigger return. So from there, we've been able to kind of tap down on like who as a human is working best with our brand and why is our audience engaging with us. So
that's a good lesson. It's the fail forward, right? That's essentially what it is that you're saying. All right. So have you had to let an influencer go? And if so, how did your team handle that situation? How did you break up with an influencer?
Yeah. So I have done it before. Mostly because this evergreen program before, like I kind of stepped into this role, and honestly, it was existing before like influencer marketing was like very well known, I should say. So there's accounts that years ago were like promoting us at a much smaller scale, but they like had no social media presence, meaning that they hadn't been on their account in like 2 years, and I would find them and grin and be like, hey, like, are you still there? Like, I would love to work with you, but like, I can't, you're not even posting. Like, if your goals aren't social media anymore, like, that's fine. But like, I'm going to have to like archive you because we only have so many spots. I mean, you say it a little differently than that, but like essentially we will archive a creator if like they're not, they don't want to work with us anymore. Or like they, I guess, you know, I don't think brands should feel timid to like know that like it's as much of a privilege for the brand to work with the creator as the creator to work with the brand. Like, yeah. I don't think brands should always think that like they have to cater to everyone who wants to work with them. It's okay to be more specific and more picky. So you have a creator that you're work, like who had worked with before and like, you know, I don't know what's going on in their lives, but maybe they're wanting something different. And I'm like, no, like from how you performed with us, like we're not able to be able to like go into a larger pay collaboration. I've gotten that questions a lot. And it's usually a good breakup. Like they get it. And like, you're always like, oh, like, could I be losing a potential person? But I think if they're not passionate about your brand, then like essentially it's not going to work. And I think I keep saying that over and over again, but it's okay to have to let a creator go if they have different priorities. I haven't done it a lot, but I find that the ones who have reached out to me, whether like our goals don't align or, you know, maybe they're at a phase in their platform or like they want to be paid, but like I'm not seeing that this is going to be a paid collaboration because from like just metrics and reporting, like what is being, what's successful and what's not, they don't want to be in the program anymore. And like, that's okay. Like you just, I always say like, we would love to have you back. Reach out to me when like you are interested again, or like maybe like when like we're in a better position as a brand to like collaborate with you. So that's why like the archive and grin is really important because like they're not gone and I can still see them. So you have that database to go back. But I think it's just important to be honest with them if they aren't working well with your brand. I mean, it happens. Like some people go a little crazy on social media and maybe they don't fit with your brand message anymore. Like that's okay. But just got to be upfront about it and as civil and mature as you can.
Yeah. I think that there are so many different ways that you can say it as well too, without it being hurtful. I mean, you brought up some really great points like, hey, it seems like our goals aren't aligning and that's okay. Okay. Next question. What types of information do you share with the influencers in order to create content? I know you want them to do what's best for their audience, but you still need to provide some sort of guidance. So a really great question. We get asked that a lot. I would love to hear
your opinion. Yeah, that's a great question. So we've actually become more specific lately. Again, with that, we have found that we're not getting necessarily the content that we can repurpose if that's something that we're looking for. So essentially like, I attach a brand asset in the campaign that I'm offering to the influencer. And that's just as basic as like I'm making it in a Google Doc. Like it's not that created, I guess I should say, but I really work with our social media manager. So I guess, you know, if you're in like the influencer manager position and working with your social media manager frequently, like go ask them, like, what are they seeing on their end in terms of content and like what's performing well and like what seems to be showing up on like our pages to then take into like a campaign doc that you're attaching and saying like, okay, like right now, 6 to 12 seconds is probably a sweet spot for you to like go viral or like maybe hit that algorithm. So we'll just give them a bunch of bullets of like tips that we've learned or like, you know, we're doing research on our back end of what's going well and what's not. I think kind of circling back to the coupon code thing, we as a brand can't necessarily share a creator's posts on our story per se, if they have their coupon code, that's nothing against them, but like, it's not fair to show one and not all. And we've gotten a lot of questions about that. So like, that's something we also include in the guide. Like if you want us to show your content, like we have a significant amount of following count on our Instagram. So like, it could really improve your following, but like understand, like these are certain content guidelines that we need to see if like that's something that you want. Like if you want us to repost from your like from your account itself, not necessarily like that we're taking, like you're emailing it to us, there are certain like guidelines that we need. So we've gotten more specific and we try to be very like open to their messaging. That's still something we're kind of tweaking because we try to focus on like very problem solution based because we're very much like that as a brand, get that messaging across from the creator's content. But at the same time, like you want the creator to be speaking. Like the whole reason it works is because the creator is like trusting their audience. So we, in the guideline, just give like, oh, like this is why I trust natural dog company for these reasons, but like we keep it very vague in hopes that like they understand like, okay, I can fit my specific like tone and messaging as an account to what we're saying. So we do provide it and we've been providing it more because that was a bit of a like long-winded answer to that question.
I think it's important to hear like all of that as well too. I think consistently what I've seen to be really successful is doing what it is that you're saying that you're doing is really just kind of giving examples. I was just talking to another brand today where I also recommended that as well too. I'm like, if you're trying to give them guidance or you're trying to get content, inspire them with other content. Like there is like, hey, these are the things that we've seen that really resonate with like the audience that's great for natural dog company. For example, right? Like maybe there are a couple of TikToks, maybe there are sounds or, you know, in the TikTok world, but when it comes to Instagram, like, hey, these are the types of content assets that seem to really resonate. That is oftentimes like a thought starter for a creator to get those juices rolling of like, yeah. Oh, this is what my take on something like that could be. They can start from someplace and then really get creative with that.
Yeah, it's just like scrolling on TikTok, all the trending sounds, and like there are certain formats of videos that go like viral or do really well. And it's, we also are paying attention to that and sharing that information with them. And I will say, like, when I share random facts that we learn about like certain algorithms or just like how social media is interacting now, the creators love it when I'm just like, hey, like, here's this blog article that I read like earlier this week. Again, like, I guess I'm acting more human at that point, but I'm like, oh, like I thought this article was really cool. Like you may find it inspiring. Here you go. Yeah. Just to like make sure that they understand, like you're here to see them succeed. Like we want them to grow their accounts and reach their goals just as much as ours. So it's important to share the knowledge. And in this day and age, like you can Google about anything. So that's it's just true. Like finding your specific way of sharing knowledge.
I love it. And it changes so much, so often. Social media, influencer marketing, like the algorithms, like you said, so much is changing that even if you're someone that is incredibly savvy, you can still miss that article. You can still miss like the, oh, there was a change. Like I didn't know that. So I think to your point, you're right. Like we should all be sharing knowledge. What did you hear? I'll tell you what I heard, right?
Yeah. Share love, share knowledge.
Exactly.
We're all trying to do our best.
Exactly. All right. What KPIs would you use to measure performance?
Yeah. So from the Grin reporting, I mean, that's where I do all of our metrics. I am focusing on conversions. At this point, it's really like how many discount codes are used because we don't really get a lot of traffic with our links. So focusing on how many conversions, honestly, like what is that revenue that was generated, as well as impressions, engagements. And I've started like paying attention more to shares with our like metrics, because I find that like the content that our creators are posting that are being shared more, something resonated with that content when it's shared. So I've been kind of like dialing more into those metrics as well to really see like what content is performing well, because again, since it's changing, like what works one week may not work the next week. So it's really important to see that shift week by week in my reporting, like what is happening to make sure that I'm also on top of it. So I would say those are the main ones. Oh, and also just like how many content pieces. I always like to see that content piece go up, because the more you post at this point from a social media standpoint, like the more you post, the more likely someone's going to see you. I think like I remember hearing at this point TikTok, like I think you got to post 2 to 3 times a day. The volume's becoming higher. So I like to like watch to see our creators post more about us. And like that could just be a story or a hard post that's like in a feed that's living longer. It's interesting to see that stories tend to convert better with us, at least from a from a product standpoint, than posts, because I think from a consumer standpoint, it's simpler steps, just like swipe up on a story and like go in and buy a product. So I'm also watching like from how many content pieces, like how many stories are people posting about us, as well as like videos and photos that we have access to.
I think that's really great to be able to track all of that too, to also tie it back to just sort of a return on investment, which ironically, the next question is about ROI. So this person says, I have a question about gifting. If the number of influencers who post after receiving the product are so low, is it worth it?
I knew that I would open us up to potentially this question when you answered, but that makes sense. That's one. And then the second part to that is, can you get a positive ROI with this campaign model, which is gifting? So let's attack the first one. If the number of influencers who post after receiving the product are low, is it even worth it?
So I think you break it down from like your product cost and like what you can send out in volume. So like for us, we're smaller ticket items. So like we are able to send out those products more from like the business side and the cost side. But again, like if you have a higher ticket item, like you're not able to gift these all the time. So no, like it's probably not worth to like have a whole gifting campaign and workflow. We have found success with it, again, with the expectation of content. Again, like the percentage may not be high, but I've been able to funnel them into like joining our creator program. And like, it's another way of me like saving me time of my outbound side of reaching out to creators, because I'm not having to necessarily follow up frequently to get them to join the program. It's like, oh, like you got to try the product. They get really excited and they just like, they're ready to join. So it's, I think if you are just sending out product with no goal in mind, of course, like it's not worth it. But I think if you have a certain, like if you're looking for new customer acquisition and you're looking for new eyeballs on your products, then yeah, if your ticket or if your costs allow you to be able to send out a certain volume of product gifting, then I think, yes, it is worth it. If you are looking for like to increase your brand awareness and get more eyeballs and reach new unique audiences outside of what you're working with now, then again, like if your costs allow and your like model gives you access to send out a volume of gifting, do it. Like, yes, it's worth it. Again, if your item's very expensive, then no, it's probably not going to be worth it, because the percentage of what content you're going to get is probably not going to seed what the outcome should be out of gifting. So it's tricky. I think you would have to start with your brand and your products and like what you are allowed to send out. And if it's a very small volume, then maybe shift it into like a different model. I mean, of course, I'm basing it off of what we do, but like maybe you do go into more like commission-based that in hopes that you get a return if they would post about you. Because I think if they have that incentive, like, oh, like I'll make money off posting about this, then you'll get your content piece. So it's, that's an interesting question. It's worth it because it's been very successful for me, but I don't want to say that it's going to work for all the brands, because you have to understand your product and like how that model works in terms of like being able to send it out, because it's a big toll to take if you're sending out a high volume of products.
Yeah. I think the thing that I would add to that too, is that the percentage sounded really low, but when you take a look at it in the stage where you're sending that out, it's at the beginning, it's at that top of the funnel. And when you look at everything that you're doing from a marketing perspective at that top of the funnel, like viewpoint, you kind of fall into the 80-20. The 80-20 rule of like, you know, 80% of this is not going to be like the crowd that we want or like the people that we want. But that 20% that you do, like that conversion rate is actually right in line with what you should expect, right? If you're at like that 15-20, that's freaking amazing. I mean, the goal is always to get more, but now you're taking that 15-20 of either the most engaged or the people that are truly saying yes, so that you can really hone in on like what they're doing for your brand. So I think initially where someone is thinking like, oh great, I've given 80% away. Like if you don't want to do product gifting, don't do product gifting. I think like there are also a ton of other things. Give a percentage off. That way, you know that they've at least made a sale. Right? I think that there are so many different ways to do that. I'm a big proponent for product gifting if you can, because it's a way to introduce your brand. And that's also what you had talked about during the fireside chat itself, is like, no, I don't want anyone in the program that hasn't used it. So for you, that is the rule. Like, nope, I'm not going to give it to you. I'm not going to give it to you unless you try. And I think that falls into like your product gifting program. And it makes sense. Like now you're getting authentic content. Like, all right, now let's evaluate it. So for me, I definitely view it as just kind of part of your strategy.
Yeah. And it's like, you want them to be excited about it. So if let's say like the 80%, like that could have just been 80% of people who aren't excited about your product and your brand. And like, essentially probably not going to be successful if you did it another way. So like, yeah, then that's okay. But essentially like the more introduction to the brand that you can get, despite of what, however model you use, it's going to help you just grow the brand and reach more people.
All right. How do you decide what content to post to your Instagram grid? Do you repost creator content?
We do. I did talk about this earlier. We're not able to reshare if they have a code. So that's more stories, because most people aren't like putting their code in their feed. So if we are repurposing a creator's, they are always tagged and they're credited. We also work with a bunch of like general accounts of like dog breeds. And that's a big, like, it's a big help for the creators, because these accounts have huge followings. And if they're giving us the rights to share their content and they're, I mean, we always give credit. Like, there's no way that we're going to say, oh, we have like, this is our dog, this is our product. We would never want to take that away from anyone. So it's really important that we get that sign off that we're able to use the content. And if creators don't want us to use it, like, that's okay. Like, we want to make sure that we respect your space, because these days people are taking other people's contents without asking, and it's not okay. So we are very careful about how we repurpose that content. So from like our social media, we will repurpose it on our Instagram, whether that is a story or a hard post. We tend to do the collaborative, or what is it? The collab button on Instagram. So it's connecting with the creator themselves. So like, we have found that when you do the collab feature with the creator on our Instagram versus like them giving us the right to take the content and upload it as ours, the engagement tends to spike, because the creator already has like a better relationship with their audience, meaning that they're responding to their comments. So like, it shows up on our feed and it shows that like this creator with Natural Dog Company, but it helps improve that engagement. And I think the creator like gets, you know, to be recognized, like they're a Natural Dog Company, like you are working with them, as well as like we get to see new audience members when we use that collab feature. So we definitely focus more on that versus just uploading it on our end that the creator is sending to us.
Ooh, I love that knowledge drop at the end with this final question. You gave us another really great, well, you gave us a ton of nuggets, but during the fireside chat as well, you dropped such a knowledge bomb as well too. A nice little hack of looking into like the comments to find other potential influencers. And the collab button is a great tidbit to leave for people who want to repurpose content and want to see that engagement as well too. And then also help contribute to like creators' growth on social media. Well, Emma, I cannot thank you enough for spending so much time with me. I've gobbled up a ton of your time, but I am so appreciative of it. And I know that our listeners are as well too. I hope you will join me again for, I don't know, maybe another podcast, maybe another fireside chat. Who will know?
Who knows? I'm sure you'll see me around.
Most definitely. Thank you again so much.
I hope you enjoyed that just as much as I did. Emma's approach to adjusting her program based on performance of her campaigns is vital for a successful influencer program. It also really proves that it's not as easy as it looks. It truly does take digging in and finding what's working, what's not, and improving with that information. Now, if you're interested in watching the Fireside Chat, which I highly recommend, the Fireside Chat with Emma was how to scale your influencer program via testing or other brands that we've featured in the past, like Able, Vera Bradley, Trifecta, Gainful, and more. Visit the live events section at grin.co. Now, before I let you go, I have a special announcement. On August 25th, Grin is putting together its first all-day virtual event, Authentic: Marketing in the Creator Economy. Authentic influencer marketing enables brands to own their direct relationships with creators to deliver more trust to the consumer through influencer content. In today's creator economy, authenticity is everything. This one-day event will focus on helping brands drive authentic relationships with consumers at scale, showcase how to cultivate honest endorsements with influencers, and explore a full funnel approach to influencers that supports the entire marketing strategy. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. And be sure to give us a rating and leave a review. Let us know what you love. And on that note, keep grinning.